Support for Politics and Public Policy reporting on SDPB is made possible by SDN Communications, your business broadband provider. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Tomorrow is South Dakota's primary and special election. For Republicans, it's time to choose between some of the state's high-profile candidates for governor and for U.S. House. There's also a vote to amend Marcy's Law. And for those in Rapid City, the choice of whether the city should issue bonds for a new arena at the Civic Center. SDPB's Lee Strubinger joins us now from the Black Hills studio to unpack all of these issues. Hey, Lee.
Hey, Lori. How's it going?
Just a few things to discuss today.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's start with a sense of where each campaign is at. So it's been a race to the finish, and let's begin with the gubernatorial race between Kristi Noem and Marty Jackley.
Yeah, it's really been a sprint these last few days, you know, especially when a poll commissioned by the Argus Leader and Kello TV came out last week, essentially showing the race as a toss-up at this point. This was the first kind of independent polling that we've got when it comes to this race, and it's really in a dead heat. The poll came out a day after SDPB-TV's televised debate last Tuesday, and, you know, both campaigns have just been doing email blast, you know, to the media, to supporters, and all those things. You know, Kristi Noem's campaign has really been pushing the Laura Kaiser story with the Attorney General's office, and also the EB-5 scandal that occurred. You know, she's pointing to a lot of those scandals that happened while Jackley was in office or hasn't prosecuted them, and those sorts of things. But last Thursday, you know, Jackley called a press conference to announce more endorsements from current and former legislators, mayors, and party leaders to tone down that negative tone, if you will. And you had folks like Russ Janklow, Governor Janklow's son, call the attack ads unprecedented and a character assassination. Senate Majority Leader Blake Curd said the Noem campaign was, you know, possibly being influenced by out-of-state consultants to run attack ads. You know, the negative tone in this campaign has really amped up. Jackley himself called Noem's attack ads Washington-style campaigning, and he claims that it's backfiring.
You're seeing it today with such strong community leaders being so vocal about what we want in a leader in South Dakota is somebody that's positive, that has South Dakota experience, and can work with all of us to create solutions, not somebody to just make up lies and say or do anything to get elected.
What has been the response from the Noem campaign to Jackley's response?
Well, for that press conference and that new round of endorsements, they issued a statement almost immediately after the press conference, and in kind of a tongue-in-cheek way, saying that they were grateful that Jackley brought together that list of, quote, lawyers, lobbyists, peer politicians, and state contractors to point out the difference between their campaigns. You know, Noem in debates lately has been calling Marty Jackley a government lawyer who will maintain the status quo that led to a lot of these scandals, mismanagement, and million-dollar settlements was what their statement said. And then the statement pointed to the congresswoman's roots as a farmer and rancher and a small business owner.
All right, so negative can be a point of view, but does negative as a general rule work? Is it effective?
Well, it should also be pointed out that over the weekend we started seeing some ads from the Jackley campaign sort of trying to set the record straight on a lot of these negative. I don't know if you saw the one of Jackley's wife and daughter sitting there at the dinner table just saying, you know, why would somebody say this about, you know, Marty, who has integrity and all that stuff. But, you know, I talked with Bob Burns, who's a distinguished professor emeritus of political science at South Dakota State University. And he says, when you look at the studies, you know, negative campaigning does work, which likely explains why we see so much of it.
We know that in any election, the trick is to turn a limited number of undecided voters your way. The negative campaigning seems to be effective in playing to that undecided voter that is looking for some reason to go one way or another in casting his or her vote.
And I think a lot of people may be drawing parallels to the year that Governor Rounds ended up clinching the nomination. Now, obviously, there's not a third GOP candidate vying for governor. Does it have a similar tone to that?
Actually, that was nastier earlier. There was a tremendous amount of money being spent in that campaign, and it turned negative very early in the campaign. And as a result, State Senator Mike Rounds was able to take advantage of the very negative image that was being created by the two leading opponents in that race, Barnett and Kirby, and come up through the middle, if you will, and was able to garner the Republican nomination.
All right, so let's take a quick look at that congressional race. How is it taking shape? It seems the same Argus leader Kelloland poll said that Dusty Johnson is in the driver's seat there.
Yep, and you know, Bob Burns says that that should play out accordingly, though he often cautions that he's not in the business of making predictions anymore. He also points to the amount of outside money that's in play during this congressional campaign, and not so much outside money for the gubernatorial campaign.
Sure.
And he says that's likely due to the national interest indicated there.
All right, on the ballot for everyone in the state, there is a question about whether to amend Marcy's Law in South Dakota. Give us a quick background on how we got here. And voters decided in 2016 to pass the law, and now lawmakers want to adjust it.
So Marcy's Law, as it's currently written, treats the notification of every crime the same. And as it was passed, critics of the law say it's, you know, incredibly vague and could subject a lot of local governments to lawsuits. And so these county state's attorneys, sheriffs, and police offices, they've endured a lot of extra costs due to this new notification system. And this adjustment to Marcy's Law gives the victims of crimes the ability to request withholding of information about a crime, as opposed to it just being an automatic.
Yeah, right. Why wasn't it that way to begin with?
Well, this is a bill that was, this is a law that was backed by, you know, a California billionaire, Henry Nicholas, who funded initiatives for Marcy's Law across the country. I think New Hampshire is considering one right now. And state officials never really met with those behind Marcy's Law and didn't get a chance to weigh in on the bill. It just showed up for the election, and people voted on it and approved it despite the warnings that a lot of state officials gave. So over between the 2017 session and 2018 session, Speaker of the House Mark Mickelson, a Sioux Falls Republican, you know, negotiated with the Marcy's Law folks to add that request provision be put in there. He initially called for an outright repeal of Marcy's Law, but this way both lawmakers and the Marcy's Law folks, compromised on an outcome that at least seemed palatable for them, and we'll see if it's palatable for the voting public.
Mm. Lee, why are South Dakotans voting on this tomorrow as opposed to November during the general election?
Ultimately, it was stated that, you know, this vote was moved to the date of the primary election to save money. And the gamble is that lawmakers, Republican lawmakers specifically, are assuming that the adjustments will pass. Republicans hold a supermajority in the state house, and when they were considering adjustments to this law, they moved the date of that vote from the general to the date of the primary election, and passed funding mechanism for that to happen and all that. You know, Democrats vehemently opposed the idea to move it, and during session I had asked State Senator Troy Heinert about it, and he says that the move really disenfranchises the Democratic base.
In western South Dakota, you know, without having primary challengers, you know, that doesn't get people to leave the ranch and come to town to vote, you know, just on this bill. Whereas in a general election, they're going to be voting for their candidate, and that gets them to town to vote. So I just think it's a bad idea.
And also in the Senate, Republican State Senator Ryan Maher on the other side of the aisle, you know, says this could save counties like Pennington and Minnehaha upwards of $100,000 this year just by moving the date forward to tomorrow. So technically, we have both a primary election and a special election tomorrow. Those registered Democrat and independent will just have less to vote on. And, you know, but there are some districts with Democratic primaries, which Democrats and independents will get to vote on.
All right, let's move on to Rapid City and the decision whether to build a new arena. What's going on out there in Rapid now?
So a couple months ago, the Rapid City Common Council passed a resolution to issue $180 million in city bonds to build a new arena at the Rushmore Plaza Civic Center. I guess I should step that back. It was $130 million to issue of city bonds.
Okay.
The interest on that would end up totaling around $180 million that the city projects. That decision was referred by several Rapid City citizens, and the decision is now up for a public vote. The city is going to pay for the project with this fund called the Vision Fund, which is collections from a half-cent sales tax that the city puts on tourism-related goods. They also call it the BBB tax for bed, booze, and board. For the last several years, that Vision Fund has raised around $11 million a year, and the city says, you know, those collections are consistently growing. And Mayor Steve Allender wants to use half of those funds, half of that $11 million, to pay down the debt on that arena over a 30-year span. That would leave about $5.5 million a year for other projects around the city that the Vision Fund is generally used for.
So what's the argument for a new arena?
Well, the Don Barnett Arena is 40 years old. Mayor Steve Allender says the arena, you know, can't hold the type of mega shows that bounce from arena to arena across the country anymore. Concerts like Eric Church, who showed up with like a dozen semi-trucks worth of equipment, you know, he says the Barnett Arena doesn't have the capacity to handle these multi-sensory inducing performances, these huge productions, if you will. Allender often points to, you know, it's not just music anymore, but lights, video, and just these full-scale productions. You know, that and also a new arena would be able to host a growing Lakota Nation Invitational basketball tournament and other events a growing civic center, if you will.
And what sort of arguments are we hearing against it, Lee?
Well, the cost, right. Obviously, $180 million is no small chunk of change. And also, this is an issue that was voted on 3 years ago, and it was rejected. This plan is a little bit different this year. It's cheaper, a slightly smaller arena, and it's financed a little bit differently. The Vision Fund that I was talking about earlier, that proposal plan, they planned on using 100% of the Vision Fund to pay for the arena. This new plan proposes to use only half of that and chip away at it over 30 years.
All right, so what happens to the Barnett?
Well, if a new arena is approved, the city says the Barnett will be repurposed. And so the bleachers that are on the lower level will remain, while the upper level, they'll be removed. And that area will be used for some alternative purposes like storage or it's still very up in the air right now, but they really want to repurpose the Barnett, and the new arena will be off to the side of the Barnett. Hmm. If it's rejected, the mayor says he'll bring a proposal to council to issue bonds to make the Barnett Arena ADA compliant, which is really the main driver for this entire discussion to begin with. The city must meet a deadline with the Department of Justice for bringing that building up to code, and that's why we're here talking about, you know, possibly a new arena or possibly repurposing the Barnett or renovating it, I should say.
Right. Lee Sturbinger, thank you so much for this. We'll see you the day after the primary on Wednesday for an update for how voters decided.
I'll be there. See you, Laurie.